listeners, and welcome back to the James Bond Complex podcast, the show where we discuss, rejoice, and analyze with a finely toothed comb the entire James Bond flower in all of its shapes and forms, from Fleming to films and everything in between. You've heard three voices, mine and two others, both of which are seated right next to me. I can feel their bodily heat right now.
I can actually, you can smell my breath. And I brush my teeth just for you.
And I need to
I did
to
the
know,
same for you guys. Oh,
and I need to know the brand of your toothpaste because it smells beautiful.
Crest, I think.
Oh, Crest is good. It's minty fresh, icy fresh.
And this podcast is brought to you by Crest.
Colgate. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Edgar.
I'm also one of your co-hosts. My name is Matt.
And I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Emery.
And this is a first for the James Bond Complex. It's a momentous occasion in the show's history. Listeners know that, you know, me, Matt, Emery, we've known each other for a good few years at this point. Yeah. And we've done events, Quebec City, Montreal. We've done podcasts, but always remotely.
Always, yeah.
That is not the case this morning.
No, we have a very special three-laptop special.
High-tech stuff.
We didn't bring the studio with us. We created, improvised the studio at your place.
This morning we needed Desmond, we needed John Cleese, and we needed Ben Wishaw because we cannot figure it out.
We should name the laptops now. I think this one would be Desmond Willen because he's the oldest. This is John Cleese because he's taller. Right, this is the newest high-tech baby, so that would be Ben Winshaw.
Absolutely.
You should put stickers on them.
I'm going to name them now. I'm going to get a label maker. I'm going to name the laptops.
I'll just put the sticker with their face.
Yeah.
Desmond, John, and
Ben.
Ben, yes.
But there's another reason that you guys are here.
I don't know what you're talking about. Just your presence.
You graciously came to visit me here in Quebec City because I've been harassing the whole Bond community and including my wife to go to the goddamn ice hotel here in Quebec City.
Don't bring Debo the wife into this. Don't bring Debo.
No, because, you know, some people don't appreciate her opinions. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I invited you guys here. We went to the beautiful ice hotel located only a mere 30 minutes north of Quebec City. A little bit of a hike to get there.
Yeah.
The sleigh dogs helped. And
Village
des Sports.
Village des Sports.
Village des Vacances.
Sporting Village Valcartier.
I think that's the official name now.
I hadn't been there since, I think, 1997 or 98.
And I would guarantee probably not much changed on the internet.
Oh, no, nothing changed. I was like, that brings back memories. And I don't have children. I don't enjoy... that was my phone.
Don't have children, don't enjoy them.
I don't have children. I don't enjoy water slides. And, you know, I don't enjoy driving in, it is a long, winding road in the middle of nowhere. It's just more remote than I remember.
Matthew, I call your bluff. You say you don't like water slides. How I distinctly remember you sliding on water, let's call it, yesterday.
Yeah, but No, that's not the same thing. We finally caved and decided to make you happy and join you at the ice hotel.
Were you left satisfied?
It's an ice hotel.
Thank you for humoring me, because it was. You know what? I think we had to do it that one time. I'm not going to go back next year. I might wait a couple years before going back, because... You know, they keep expanding it. They keep making it better. It's moved locations, and now this has been the final location for the last couple of years. And I think they've kind of got it to a point where they know what they're doing now, and they've got it in such a way that it's really professionally done. Whereas before, not that it wasn't professionally done, it's before they didn't have all the hospitality needs. Now they're doing it on the site of an actual hotel. So their concept is you can pay the expensive night in the ice hotel and freeze your ass off all night, but your stuff, your clothes, and all of your belongings would have its own hotel room in the actual 4-star hotel that's on site. Whereas a couple years ago when they were doing it on the site of the old zoo, they didn't have that. It was like you're staying in an ice hotel, bring all your stuff in a bag, and freeze your tail off.
So all this like this whole activity, which was done yesterday, this weekend, sort of ties into, I guess, a theme that we're mildly poking on this week's episode, which is sort of winter bond, wintry set bond, so to speak.
Right.
A little bit of Die Another Day, the Ice Hotel.
Well, I think that was the main inspiration for me. I was like, I wanted to do this last year to celebrate Die Another Day, but you've only got a certain window to go. There's only 3 months where this hotel is actually viable because they can't build it until January. And then it spends a couple of days not being fully complete because they don't get the necessary temperatures. And then now we're kind of at the tail end of it where probably in 3-4 weeks it'll be gone. So,
yeah.
You know, and also it's, you know, it's winter.
Yeah.
And it's not near any of the more touristy locations in Quebec City.
No.
So, you know, surprisingly, like yesterday I saw a couple that the guy was wearing sort of a winter gear tuxedo, and a lady was wearing a winter gear like bride's or wedding dress
onesie. But, I think you described it as
onesie. It was kind of bizarre. I was like, "What the hell is that? Are those like literally my this is where my head went. Are those James Bond cosplayers? Are they member of the Bond community? I don't. Oh yeah, they do weddings here.
Well, they did, yeah, they have a chapel, so they have a, they do, obviously they do weddings. It's kind of weird, because, I mean, yesterday was a very, very, not an atypically cold day. It was a colder day than we've had in the last couple of weeks. But there's no way that Pierce Brosnan was walking around in the Ice Hotel in a tux. It is not warm in there. It's warmer than the outside.
Pierce Brosnan in a tux. Brosnan? Think about poor Halle Berry.
Yeah,
her
yeah think about that.
Well, even Miranda Frost, doesn't she have like she was back
in her name.
Well, Halle Berry is her midriff is showing.
Yeah, so that was.
I wouldn't. You know what? I wouldn't have sex in an Ice Hotel bedroom. It's a little it's not.
The beds were. I snuck over the rope and collected the bed there. But it's, I wouldn't
allegedly you did that.
There is no proof.
The only proof, possible proof, I'm not confirming or denying that it exists, would be from me. I'm not saying whether I have pictures of you on a bed that you got there illegally.
But you could say illegally, but there was no security to be seen anywhere. Like the only employees were really in the bar.
The only security we had to get on site was from a 13-year-old kid that just checked if we had our passes. Honestly, I felt so safe.
It was kind of as easy as it is for James Bond to infiltrate some of these hideouts. God. It's like, wow, is there any security?
You know, I'm pretty sure you could have taken a piece of paper, sort of recreated the design, not even with a printer, just
hand drawn,
and a kid's
kid doesn't give a shit. Kid didn't care.
He didn't care. Like
he gets his minimum wage, and that's a guy. Not to say that the employees there weren't. I mean, like when we got to the bar, the service was good. But it's Village des Vacances is one of those places where they hire a lot of younger people to work there because they're right next to the military base, and there's a lot of young families that are there because of the military base. So they do have a lot of employees that are of a certain age.
I don't want to sound like I'm denigrating them, but it's a student job.
It is a student job.
Mm-hmm. Like they're not working at the main hotel. They're just letting you in on a site, and it costs. Like, I was surprised how much it costs. Like, you know, when you get there, like, okay, I've committed to this weekend, and I already we showed up by train, and when I got, I didn't remember. I thought it was $20 to get on site. It's $40 to go to see that thing.
Yeah, it was
no drinks included in that.
No, but before a couple of years ago, before the pandemic, they did have a ticket that included a drink. So it was, I think it was $40 all in with the drink, and now it's $40 on site, no drink, and then you have. But at the bar, I was surprised at the selection of drinks that they had at the bar because they did have like a whole drink menu.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good. And I have to admit, I wasn't quite certain what to expect. I will confess that I had never really investigated what the Ice Hotel at Valcartier was like. So I'd seen a few images, but nothing more. So I didn't really know what to expect. And frankly, having seen all those snow/ice sculptures that come out of the walls, you know, I'm not saying they did as well as what, you know, Peter Lamont would have done. But it was honestly pretty good. Like, it felt like something, yes, you know, a megalomaniacal villain would have carved, you know, David in the wall or something like that. It was, interesting.
Yeah, well, and honestly, like, some of the stuff they did, yeah, it would be, it could have worked if, you know, Gustav Graves had said, no, this is what I want here, and the big design, because there was pillars, and there was... It was well done. It was surprisingly well done.
Like, I want four women dancing the French can-can on this wall right here.
No, but you realize, like, the Ice Palace, just the weight of it would probably collapse on itself, because...
It had high cathedral ceilings on Die Another Day. Yeah, this, like, one had a high, I mean, it was maybe 15, 20 feet ceilings. Max. But I mean, like, I don't know how the construction process is. The one thing that was underwhelming was kind of like you had the suites for the rooms, and then you had the regular rooms. Where, like, it's just a bed made of ice. So, like, there's nothing fancy. Some of the themed rooms were really cool, but at the same time, super creepy.
Oh yeah,
the
teddy bear room is
blood red.
Yeah, it's I don't know, I'm thinking The Shining with the one with the sort of face with glowing eyes, which was kind of creepy.
Like Winter Pan's Labyrinth almost.
Not staying here.
I mean, I can imagine that it would be difficult to fall asleep, you know, in such a cold room, but then again, there's plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. So
And we also they had a slide which was surprisingly fun. Only you and I did it. Edgar was too cool
I was keeping it fresh.
So we both wanted to do it a second time. It was kind of fun.
But when we got to it the second time, that's when the tourist bus had really gone into full force. And nope,
not waiting. Because the first time we did it, there was no line.
No, there was no line.
Do it back to back many, many times. But we said, oh, we'll come back. And when we did, it was not as appealing suddenly, because there was a long waiting period.
And there was a bar, which was nice too, and I think that the concept of their bar was cool, because they had the drinks glasses that were like the regular kind of rocks. I want to say size, but the actual quantity wasn't the same volume. It was a glorified shooter. But then I saw in the background that they had like champagne flutes. They had like a longer glass for champagne, and they had a champagne sponsor. So I suppose that you could have a cocktail there, but it wasn't a place where you could hold a private event. I think they're really there for, let's get as many people in and out of here as possible.
Yeah.
You couldn't go there and have a drink and socialize for a long time, because there's just such a continuing movement of people in there.
Maybe another thing that makes Die Another Day a little bit, in a long list of things that makes Die Another Day a little bit funny, is, you know, alcohol and the cold don't mix very well. So I don't think you want to get drunk at the ice hotel.
No. No, probably not, and like, but I think they want to avoid that too. Because I mean, I don't think.
No, it's a family. You don't. Oh God, just imagine somebody getting sick.
Oh yeah, God, and in the
frozen
vomit. Right,
yeah, there. Just I didn't want to say it, but you understand. Yeah.
But the bar top was like, I mean, they spilled a drink, and you could see like what portion of it freezes right away on the bar. But I mean, like, they can just take a blowtorch.
But you know what? Surprised they went more typically winter theme French Canadian. You know, there was no maple syrup that sealed the neige. They went,
But I mean, and it's a season for it too. Because I mean, last weekend there was the local Santa Loisir, the local kind of like
leisure,
social activity club here had a cabana sucre day, so sugaring off, as you would say in
sugar shack.
That's what the official English version is. I don't know if you guys
heard of that.
That's what the Anglophone version of
sugaring off.
Sugaring off is where you pour this
the
syrup somewhere on the snow, and you roll it up, and it's delicious. They could have had that there. I think that would have been a nice little extra,
especially for like tourists.
Especially for tourists, you want to experience Quebec. That's
winter.
Winter and Quebec. What are we known for? Well, 90% of the world's maple syrup comes from here. Ontario thinks they produce any, and New Brunswick thinks they produce some, but
it's delicious, delicious Quebecois meatball.
It's a little...
We're getting sugar a flavor off another time. Of Quebec in winter.
But I'm surprised they didn't have more like some of the... they did have it on the menu, but more of the Quebec maple whiskey products.
Yeah.
Like I thought it the bar, when I got there, I thought the bar
did was going to be all... Did they have a sortilège?
They did, but it wasn't being promoted as like the main thing. And even the...
Dizarono was quite proud to be there.
Dizarono had the big...
It depends on who's paying to...
It depends on who's paying, but I mean, I guess they got the sponsors for it. But at the same time, like when you think of Disaronno, are you thinking of winter?
No,
not necessarily. I would have thought more of like a ice wine maker. Yeah, but
who has the deepest pocket?
Oh, absolutely. But Disaronno must be owned by like Diageo or whatever.
No, it's a missed opportunity, but the economy's.
They'll take what they can get because they just want the tourists there because they weren't able to do the ice hotel. I think last year was the first time they were able to do it after the pandemic because I don't think they did it in 2020. I think they did because they had started already, but 2021, I don't think there was a hotel at all because they just couldn't do it. And I think last year was the first time that they...
We were a little slow to open here in Quebec.
There were a lot of people. I was surprised at how many people
were. Oh, yeah.
So was I.
Like, well, we showed up when there was two busloads of people that I got.
No, but I'm just saying on the sites of not even the ice hotel, the hotel, the village itself.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people there.
Well, that's all relatively. Like the hotel itself is only maybe 5 or 6 years old. The actual new hotel that's there, and so they've capitalized on that because before it was just the water park and just the snow slopes in the winter for tobogganing. And then they added the hotel. It's like, you can come to the water park in the summer and stay at the hotel for a night. Because before, it was just camping that they had. I mean, there's a certain draw for that. People want to go camping in an RV and they park there and then they go to the water park. But at the same time, people are coming from farms.
It's a little bit sexier. You know what? They have a good view. So I get the appeal if you're a tourist.
And oh, yeah.
I get it. But,
you get the good view of the mountains and all that. It's a nice area. The only thing is, if you're a resident, probably like 4, 5, 6 times a year, they do buy fire drills at the military base, which is literally not even 2 kilometers away, and I can hear them here. So imagine if you're there.
Yeah.
Okay. The live artillery drills are quite impressive. It's quite loud, so...
artillery drills.
Sure. Live bomb drills and stuff like that. And I've actually been there... at their shooting range, at the military base. So it's great view. I mean, you're in the middle of the woods. You don't there's nothing around. So
that
you
must could be just, nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. But
speaking of military drills and winter, how about we talk about our favorite winter team Bond moments, gentlemen?
I was actually thinking about that. Does Sean Connery have a winter Bond moment? That's it, eh? He doesn't have one at all. There's nothing.
It's funny. George does one movie, and it's mostly a winter film. Yeah. Connery did 6. He never touches snow.
And has he done a movie that's set in a snowy... I'm trying to... Like, I haven't seen...
I mean, he goes to the Bahamas. He goes to Jamaica. He goes to Istanbul. He goes to...
No, but I'm saying... Kentucky. Non-Bond things... Mm. For some reason, isn't there like a snow scene in the Avengers movie that he did?
Oh, maybe. I don't remember that. But in Bond itself, there's none.
We know that he doesn't, but I don't think I've seen him in a winter theme movie in all of his career ever.
No.
I mean, he didn't.
Oh, like no, I do. This final movie, The League of the Extraordinary Gentlemen, at the end it ends, I think, in the Himalayas or something like that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's fake snow, but...
I think all the other Bonds get an actual real wintry moment. Except, I mean, Daniel Craig does get one, but it's not at the same time. Like, it didn't have to. If you put all the Austrian scenes anywhere else, like
stunt double did have. Like, he showed up for the close-ups and
But I mean, like, there's no like real
CGI
winter.
Double did fly that plane, but.
But even at that, it's. Like, it's a winter moment, and it's cool, but, like, he doesn't strap on a pair of skis, or he's not going down the slope to
have
a shovel case.
I have a feeling he probably doesn't know how to ski.
I think it's on record. I think it's on record. He doesn't know how to ski.
But does Roger Moore? Because, I mean, that was...
Absolutely
Roger Moore. No, Roger Moore. Roger Moore does. You see the first... there's a documentary
they
did for the first 25 years of Bond, and he shows up. I think he's quite... good. Like,
Roger Moore is a more elegant person than we sometimes...
I think he's the most gentlemanly and most probably well-versed in all these kind of like...
And what is skiing if not... a bit of a gentleman sport as well, you know.
I think skiing is one of those sports where you get like both sides of the coin, where you've got like really douchey kind of people that ski, but then you've got like more, it's more of a rich person's sport in the sense that it's a little more expensive to go skiing, but people who are willing to pay for the yearly pass will go all the time and they love it. Yeah. But then you'll have the same douchebags who will go there and they'll smoke a joint and they'll go down the slopes and then
where's the half pipe, man?
They're there for the after ski.
They go down once and then it's
after ski. And
haven't gone skiing since I think 1992, 1993, which it was. So it means I went skiing once.
I've never been downhill skiing. I've always been cross country skiing.
They tried to show me. I sucked. I was not. I'm not the.
The first time is. It's even I was terrible the first time.
Yeah, so. But I was not a very patient kid, and I was not well coordinated. I still ain't, but. And I didn't want to do the course twice in the same day and not go. So I went. Damn it. So I went up and I started skiing. I fell a couple of times and I'm not stopping until I go down. And I stopped and I'm sliding and I'm going fast, man. I realize I'm going really fast. And the chalet is coming my way. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. So I managed to like break.
Yeah.
Swerve
and stop there, like create a wall of snow. And one of the mothers comes, hey, no downhill. I'm like, what's downhill? This is downhill. This is way too dangerous. I'm not doing this ever again. And this is how I stopped doing any skiing. That's the story of my first and only descente de ski ever.
Yeah, Roger Moore had a little bit of a hockey moment, which was,
I heard rumors, and I know I seen an article that famous French Canadian hockey player was meant to be in that scene. Apparently, they approached Guy Lafleur to be in For Your Eyes Only.
I heard about that. Yeah,
I wish he was still alive so we could ask him.
Yeah, but we don't know the identity of the three skaters. I'm guessing they just took three randos and put them on skates.
I don't know if he would have shown on screen or they just, let's hire the best. Let's do that. I'm Gabby Broccoli. Guy, do you want to be in a James Bond movie? Maybe that happened. We don't know.
We don't have that on record. I'm sorry, Gabby. I can't divulge that information. That information is not meant for schoolboys. Some wintry moments. O'Connery doesn't have any.
No.
George in one movie has a bunch.
Yeah.
Go skiing. Does he?
Well, you performed one yesterday.
And one there's.
You did one yesterday.
Well, he didn't actually curl. He was watching and he was.
Yeah, there was curling. There's the. Race with the cars on the ice. I don't know if that's a sport.
He hangs from a cable.
It is in Scandinavia. They do a lot of ice races. They're crazy over there.
And he does slide on his belly. So this, I don't know.
That's a winter sport.
I did it. I slid on my belly.
For a brief moment, I did think that the ceremonial president of the James Bond complex had shown up. I was like, George, what are you doing
here? My favorite moment, I think, is The World Is Not Enough with the Parahawks. I think that was the ski scene with that and the getting chased by the ski-doos on...
there's a lot of skiing scenes in Bond, but...
What about the snowboard in A View to a Kill?
I was going to bring that
with
up.
With Beach Boys or Fake
it's,
Beach Boys.
It's a great scene ruined by poor musical choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a couple of like odd musical cues in the...
What's worse, that or the whoop
in the Man with the Golden Man?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Beach Boys.
I think the Beach Boys.
Fake Beach Boys. It's like a cover, but everybody knows what I'm talking about.
It's like a bad... Yeah.
Also, like, guys, it lasts longer. Like,
that's what she said.
Also, another one that is not exclusively bad.
The whistle is like 2 seconds. The Beach Boys play for maybe a minute.
But snowboarding wasn't really a big thing back
then. I think it introduced the sport to many, many people. Like, even when I first saw it in the early 90s, it was...
It wasn't an Olympic sport until, like, 98 in Nagano.
It was still, like, kind of niche. And
what, you can kill a person, remove a piece of their skidoo, and then use it as a as a planche?
Yeah.
Wow.
What a concept.
They simplified it without the mass murdering and all.
But it was big in the X Games for a while, and snowboarding was kind of like, there was a lot of bad things associated with snowboarders. Like there was a lot of people who were skiers who like didn't like snowboarders because of the way they acted on the slopes, and they were more aggressive and things like that. And it's easier to do crazy stunts because a lot of the snowboarders were skateboarders, and they were bringing the skateboard culture to snowboarding. And now look at it. It's a bigger draw because of X Games than skiing has been. But then skiing came back and said, we could do that shit too. And they do all the crazy acrobatic and stunt stuff. And
it's tough. I have been on some of those board parks and, but I don't snowboard. I only ski.
Yeah.
And, I didn't do too. I don't want the listeners to think that I'm doing triple pirouettes, jumping over stuff. I can jump a little bit, maybe less so with my knees these days. But
we're old.
Yeah, we're old. But just being on a going down a board park. You know, I'd go up and down the pipe, the half pipe, a little bit. I didn't, you know. It's quite stuff. Something. But but the presentation and what those snowboarders, you know, want to do and all those, you know, as a skier, I was like, wow, okay, no, these snowboarders are for real. Like, they're
talent.
Serious.
It's talent and it's athleticism because not everybody can do that. And it's more so than the kind of skateboard counterculture where, you know, you see skateboarders do stuff and there's technique involved, but nowhere near the speeds of a snowboarder, and you're not doing these incredible jumps where you've got to stick the landing, because if you don't get the landing right, then you're breaking bones at a velocity that's a lot faster than skateboarding. Skateboarding, you break a bone, you know, you're falling from a height, you're maybe going a couple kilometers an hour. Snowboarder, you're probably coming down the half pipe at 50, 60 kilometers an hour sometimes, if not more.
It's fast. It's very fast. It's very, very impressive. So maybe the snowboarding in A View to a Kill is not among our favorites.
You know what? Even though it's silly, when I still kind of like that sequence. Just the music really ruins it. But it's, you know, what he does is still impressive. It's still fun. When he goes on the water, it just...
But it's a cool stunt that, like, that had never been done before. And so now you're doing it on film and you're doing a crazy, cool, different stunt.
It's obviously not Roger Moore. I don't know if I'm spoiling anything. Roger Moore only showed up for his close-up.
Well, I don't think that Pierce Brosnan was getting chased by Parahawks for real.
I think he's dragged by... I think he did a few of these stunts, but nothing. Like, when there's an explosion, that's not him.
No, obviously not.
He's being dragged probably on a truck and he's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that one's filmed very well. The World Is Not Enough sequence. There's something about it. It's lacking a little bit of panache. It's lacking a bit of punch, I find.
It's very fast. It's filmed very fast. And it's filmed from a lot of different angles.
They're trying to hide the fact that their star can't do this. It's not their star.
It's not Tom Cruise. Let's do this jump, parachute jump off a motorcycle off the side of a
cliff. You know what? I don't expect any... but it's just...
I can't wait for that final shot. Because, I mean, there's Bond has never attempted to do a single...
I don't expect shot. All the actors, and I think it sets a precedent that will probably end up killing a bunch of actors. If other actors try to do that, eventually one of them is going to kill himself.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in terms of a single shot, like one single camera shot stunt...
I don't know, they have drones, man. That shot couldn't have been done 5 years ago.
No, but now they're doing it. But they wouldn't. But practically, if you're a filmmaker, you're not doing it in one shot, because you're doing, like, look at any Bond movie or any other action movie. You would never say, it's easier to do it in one shot. It is easier to do it in one shot, but it's also a lot easier to edit it in multiple shots, because if you get it wrong the first time, then you get to do it 10 other times and get it from different angles.
It's probably harder to do it in one shot, because everything needs to go perfect.
If it goes perfect in one shot, then you're happy because you got it all in one shot and you got it on
multiple cameras in one shot. Check the gate, and if you're filming on film, if there's any dust, you have to do it again.
One person messed up, then... Whereas one person messed up, cut.
And then they have drones that they need to, and you need to wait for the conditions. It's a nightmare, man. But
it's a nicer shot in the end visually. You're
gonna appreciate sure it's nice, but there you got so many man. Like it is a shot that couldn't have been done 5 years ago because of the drones, the technology used to film that shot. Almost like a science experiment.
Well, I mean, there's an analogous. It's not a drone, obviously, but in The Spy Who Loved Me, you know, they did wait a long time. They waited several days for the right conditions for the jump.
That almost went haywire. The ski touches the parachute for a second there. I'm like, oh my God.
But at the same time, like that's budget too. Because I mean, if it went, the second unit waiting to do that stunt, you're still there and you're paying the whole crew to sit around budget waiting.
Goes like the more technology becomes affordable, like
it's longer. Drones have come down in cost. Because I mean, before a drone would cost
I can buy a drone. I did buy a drone. ended up in the canal, but I did buy a drone. Two flights and down the canal it went.
I've been toying with the idea of a drone, but I have a feeling that if I bought one, then I'd film a bunch of cool stuff. I'm like, ah, it's cool. And then it would sit and collect dust because I wouldn't be using
it. You don't have the time with the kids. And you know what? The kids would probably steal it from you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's when it would get ruined.
Yeah.
But, I'm thinking more of like...
You need to find a place to use it that doesn't have too much wind.
Well, I've got like the yard, like beyond my yard here, and I'm pointing, but you guys can't see, but beyond my yard here, I've got big open space. I've got no neighbors in the back, and it's just an open park. So technically,
do you have any? Because even I did that, but near power lines.
There's no power lines.
I think it messed with the.
Because of the radio frequency. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorites. Just bring it back to Bond, just for a second on this Bond theme podcast. But just to bring it to Bond, I think one of my favorites is. It's a long sequence, but the one in For Your Eyes Only, just because there's so much happening in that one. There's the bobsled sequence.
Oh, my God. It's a little bit absurd. Like, it's comical. Use every winter sport we can think of in one action sequence when you think about it. It would be like having a firefight at Le Village des Sports, like tourists everywhere, la 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 la, people are. Da, 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 da.
Well, luckily, the no innocents are mowed down in that sequence. But I think that's actually one of the things that I like about it. They squeeze as much juice as they can out of that sequence, and the stunts themselves are quite extraordinary. And the music is great. Everybody loves the Belcanti score and that track in particular. But I do like that variety, and I like that it. That sequence happens in ebbs and flows. It's very fast. There's the chase, and then there's the moment where there's no music, and he's sort of hiding from Kriegler. That's pretty good. And then, of course, there's the ascent into the ski jump where he's always looking behind him at the guy from Game of Thrones. There, I think
there's two guys from Game of Thrones in that. Movie
the two guys from Julian. Our friend.
Oh, it's right, true, yeah.
Julian.
Yeah,
yeah. Julian. Our friend.
Buddy.
I don't know.
maybe we'll introduce you sometime. Get a couple extra years of podcasting on your belt, and we'll think about it.
All right. I see what you're doing there.
But it's either between that or just everything in Majesties. Those are probably... It's tough to not go with those two, I find.
But I think Majesties is the one that's more winter-focused because he's in the Swiss Alps for a good portion of the movie. Mm. So there's more of that concentration.
Yeah, if you want to go for the winter experience, almost half the movie is on that mountain, so...
Because, I mean, Die Another Day, there's a couple of... like in North Korea, was it winter in that one? Which one is... No, there's one that's more wintry.
It's only the Ice Palace. Mm-hmm. That's weird. But you have... we didn't mention the Living Daylights in my...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to mention that. I was coming up to that with the Miriam Dabo going down in a cello case together.
Oh, I'm thinking about the entire car chase.
Oh, there's a car chase, too. I think I like the car chase better than the tobogganing down the...
the toboggan is you know...
It's always comical.
It always gets me upset when a character has a cool vehicle that he needs to trash and use something else less cool.
Yeah.
Batman does that in Batman Returns where
right.
He's got to trash the Batwheel in half to go through a small alleyway. Yeah. Alleyway? Annoys me. Yeah. My God, it's such a cool car.
That Aston Martin Vantage is just...
You know, it's just like... Super
nice. Yeah, it's a beauty. It's I love that one.
It's my way... the old classic, besides the DB5, I didn't like...
That's probably one of the more affordable Aston Martin now.
Surprisingly not, because I've seen that one go up at... I've seen the 80s style Vantages go up for... like 90,000-120,000, but I've seen the Aston Martin Vanquish from Die Another Day come up quite a few times at like 63,000.
Oh,
63,000.
I'll buy six
for an Aston Martin,
for a used Aston Martin. But I mean, we're talking about an Aston Martin that's got a couple of hundred. That's why I was a little surprised when David bought a Vantage. I'm like, you bought a Vantage for that money, but you probably could have found a Vanquish for the same money. But at the same time,
it's the Vantage from. Yeah, I think it goes with. He probably prefers Casino Royale to Die Another Day.
No, but the Vantage is smaller than the DBS.
You lost me there.
Okay,
I don't care.
The Aston Martin Vantage is a smaller car. The problem with the Vanquish is it was a much crappier car because the Vanquish was designed in such a way that. It would be cheaper to produce because most of it was based on the Jaguar. A lot of it was shared with the XK. I want to say the XK7, but Jason's not here to correct me, but he'll correct me afterwards. But a lot of it was shared with another car, so they were cheaping out on all the parts.
Casino Royale is cooler than Die Another Day.
Yeah, but Casino Royale is a DBS. Now we're getting our models.
Okay, but the Living Daylights.
Yeah.
I love the gadgets. I love that he goes on ice. Yeah. I love that the car goes on skis. Yeah. I love that the car actually, saw that he cuts the ice with. Yeah. Is that meant to be like a feature or he improvised that?
Lord only knows.
I don't know if that was specifically designed for that.
I'm improvising a gadget. I'm sorry.
Also, how thick is that ice? How impressive is that saw? Because if the ice is so thin that you can't hold it, that they should not be chasing each other in heavy vehicles on that lake.
But it's kind of like
nothing makes sense.
What BMW is it that like the logo opens up and then you've got that like little saw that comes out to saw that particular wire that's coming up?
Yeah. And they probably paid a lot of money to have the logo featured that well in that movie, because Aston Martin doesn't have that. Thing ever, anything comparable to that?
Yeah, well, they have some. No, they mostly have. It's mostly just weapons on most of the Aston Martin.
Yeah, but they never like look at our logo.
No, that's true. They don't do that. But I think it's because they had the deals with. At that point, like for Die Another Day, they had the deal with Ford.
Yeah, so but they probably had.
They stopped hyper focused on the Aston Martin. And even when they went for Goldfinger, when they got the Aston Martin, it wasn't like, Aston Martin, can you please give us a car? They said no. Then they had to go buy one.
You know, and something that's funny is to watch movies and watch the brands and how long and who's featuring them. Like I was watching for the sake of the show where I'm watching. Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
And he gets his mission through his sunglasses, and you see that Oakley logo so many times, close ups of Tom Cruise, beautiful facing for the cameras turning around. Oakley. Like it looks like it lasts 5 minutes of him just like wearing their product.
It's not like Bond doesn't do that. There's Skyfall at one point where he's looking at his Omega for it. You could literally count out a five count, and he's looking at the watch like, okay, we get it. It's an Omega. We know. We know.
It's funny. When you pay attention to that, it's just absurdly funny.
What do you guys think about the tobogganing in the cello case?
I prefer to the tobogganing in it's funny, more fun than the one in Homage à la Secret Service. It's kind of funny and silly, light, and you know, if I could afford,
if you could afford a cello,
cello case,
you know, ditch the cello, keep the case.
Sometimes I actually. I had a search for a cello case, but I realized like it's really expensive. It's expensive.
Yeah.
Kind of stupid to make a.
That would be an expensive prop just to have as a display.
If I was a more handsy person that you know could build stuff with my hands, it might be something I'd consider building. Mm. But I am not that person, it's something that
right.
I can think of it. I find somebody to do it cheap for me.
could maybe sort of put little pseudo skis underneath just so it controls a little bit better.
Is that on display somewhere though, where we could actually see how they did it? Because that's what I'm kind of surprised that it went down the hill so well without anything, because you can't see anything under it.
It didn't, though. When you watch the behind the scenes, I think it's Marion Dabo says in the making of, like, it was always losing control because Timothy is much heavier than her, so it was never going in a straight path. So what we see in the movie is probably the best shots they got assembled together to look cool, but in reality, it was probably like, whoa!
Maybe they didn't put any effort into, like, making it flat at the bottom so it slides better. Because I'm thinking, like I've seen cello cases before, and they've got a certain shape to them, you know, front and back have got different shapes. So I mean, like,
they're not very aerodynamic.
So you're saying you can't go skiing down a mountain in a riding a cello?
I'm saying you could, but I'm saying for the practicality of doing a movie where you have you're making a whole stunt scene revolving around that, and you want to control all the variables. Did they make a stunt version of it,
or they did, but it's
cold.
I'd like to see what they tried to do.
It's probably in bond motion, I'm assuming.
It was, but it was in the... I'm not being sarcastic here. It was at bond in motion, but it was so far behind the Vantage that I was like, oh, cool, the cello case is there, but I can't really...
Is it going to be in Saratoga?
No idea. Right, we'll find out.
You guys will find out.
Yeah, maybe we'll see and find out.
You know what? I'm going
to... I like when Bond... I love...
You like Bond.
When Bond improvises a solution to a problem with whatever he has at hand. It might be a gadget... It might just be like, I ran out of steam. I don't have any idea. There's this thing. It's now a slate. I like that.
It's kind of like the practical use of what you have around you.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good situation awareness. Like, oh, okay, well, this can go down a hill, probably.
It's very Jason Bourne, I think.
The débrouillardise.
Born before Bourne. Very MacGyver.
Yeah, it more MacGyver than right. Bourne. Bourne's just like, I'm going to punch my way out.
But, you know, I like that sequence. I think it's kind of fun. It's not very realistic, but, you know, show them your passports, you know.
Yeah. Nothing to declare!
The cello. No, it's a fun sequence. Is it realistic? Probably no, but it's fun. I do like that sequence a lot.
There's a hill back here, so if I can get my hands on a loose cello case, I will test it.
Test it out.
Yeah, just use a violin case.
Oh, I've got one, but it won't. I don't think it'll fit me.
Just use it as a, you know, a sort of skateboard.
I could use one of my guitar cases. It's flat.
Why not?
It's not going to look as good, though.
Yeah, use your kids instead.
Use my kids to go down the hill on? Yeah, you can try that, too.
Yeah. Break one, go back to the store and get a new one.
William's tall enough, and I think put Rosie and Felix side by side, I think I could just, like...
Yeah, you know, I think it would work.
Water ski down the hill on them.
I don't think your wife would appreciate you putting your kids...
No, she's not listening to this. Future. But it's that Daniel Craig has a couple ones, but like not really using the winter to its full advantage.
No, he barely does. I mean, in Spectre, that's barely snow.
But it's snow, but it's like it could have, like I was saying before, it could be anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't have to be there. It could have been anywhere else, and it would have been the same stunt.
But
it's a bit strange. Like, why does the plot take? Yes, the plot takes him there because Madeleine Swann is a doctor there. Fine, but why is she a doctor there in this movie? You know, it's not like.
But I think it was more of a callback to On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
The entire movie is
one of the kind of Craig moments that I do enjoy that I think is cool, even if it's not really like a snow moment. It's not like a fun in the snow moment. It's Quantum of Solace where he drops the necklace in the snow.
Oh, I think, my God.
No, hear me out. The visual shot, the cinematography of it is cool.
Just that you're stretching it with the
definition. It's stretching it at the definition of winter, but he is dropping it in the snow. And if he had just dropped it on the pavement,
I know, but when, as a visual of snow, the snow looks like diamonds sometimes and crystals, and there's a beauty to that shot. I see why they probably
it was a good to do it that way. Because I mean, you would drop it in sand or on pavement or in grass.
On pavement, snow's white, it's pure. Yeah. And there's a Mark Forster is not the hasn't made the most cohesive Bond theme.
Yeah,
from an editing standpoint, but his shot composition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is great. It's really when it stops cutting to random stuff and giving you a headache, and when it stops and shows you just one shot, it's beautiful film.
I think that's in the Craig era. I mean, like I said before, I would have liked to have seen a little bit of a, you know, you see him swim in Skyfall and he does laps in a pool and it's like, you're almost getting those like classic Bond moments. Like we didn't get any underwater moments in the last, what, 20 years
plus? That's, in Skyfall when he goes, see, that's another.
But moment. Are they underwater moments or are they under? Are they just like they're filmed underwater and it's cool, cool? I mean, underwater moments where there's an underwater fight where like.
Oh, there's another, he kills a man underwater.
That's really the only, okay, Skyfall is the only one.
I was going to ask you, is that winter? Because he's under the ice.
Yeah, I think I would actually, you know, thinking about it hard, it would be considered a winter moment. It's not winter like we get winter here, but it is a winter moment for the context of, it's cold enough if it's frozen a lake over, it's cold enough.
So that would mean the climax of Skyfall is a winter
moment. But, you know, it's ridiculous that, you know, he goes there and he gets out and he's not like shivering.
Hypothermia.
No hell.
Because if it's cold enough to freeze over, then it's definitely cold enough for you to get hypothermia.
Like,
so it's unrealistic.
And I don't even think his gun would have worked either underwater after that.
Does he use a gun?
We'd have no. Does he shoot? No, he throws a knife in his back.
Yeah, but I think that's more of a question for, you know, someone like Ray, because I mean there's like. More marine version.
Oh, but yeah, you know what? I don't want. You know, people are redoing that scene in Titanic with Rose and Jack.
Oh yeah,
on the door to see how realistic it is that they can't both fit.
There's a university actually did the tests where they took a pool.
It's movie and it's storytelling and. It's not meant to be reality.
But it wasn't a true story to begin with. It's made up for the movie.
Yeah, I know.
For the sake of cinematography and for the sake of...
But but it's the same thing.
Romance is dead. We have to see if this scene is realistic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's a cool moment. But honestly, it's in the context of the movie, when he goes underwater and he kills that man, it's a cool concept. Yeah, That's one of the things I don't spend my time going, oh, I'm afraid of... going on a little frozen lake and falling under the ice, but it is a nightmare scenario for a second.
Oh God, yeah. And I mean, I have a huge fear of drowning.
So I don't have that, but that's just being trapped.
No, being trapped under ice. And
I'm not afraid of water, but you know, I'm not. You know, Edgar and I think of doing our scuba classes.
Yeah.
And some people actually go into caves to sort of swim in caves. I hate doing that.
Scary as hell, man. That's for me.
I hate doing that. I'm even going just in caves. Nope.
I'm mildly claustrophobic in that. Like, you get me into like a tight space like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, nope, I'm not comfortable. I'm not doing this. This is.
We all watch a lot of movies, and over the last year or so, I've ventured into some documentaries, but I guess you would call them adventure documentaries or stuff like that. Sometimes it's drama, and I've watched one or two, titles escape me, unfortunately, but I've watched one or two sort of dramatic documentaries with people that had to deal with that stuff, and I watch a lot of movies. You guys watch a lot of movies. I don't think I've ever been as tense on my couch as I was watching those movies. Scary. This is a documentary.
Is it one of, because there's a multiple men that go in situations like that and drown, and it takes years for them to be brought up to the surface. And because depending, like there was one dude who drowned in a lake, and because the lake's chemical composition, his corpse didn't decompose when he found him. It was perfectly intact, and he had been dead like for a good decade.
Jesus Christ,
That is bizarre. I mean, natural, but bizarre. So I guess, and you know what? It's funny. Up until we started this conversation, I never considered the climax of Skyfall as a winter. I guess because there's no snow, but if there's cold enough for the lake to freeze, it's obviously, you know, we're pretty late in the year or very early in the year, whichever. No, what's our Skyfall timeline? You're the timeline person.
Well, Skyfall. That's the problem is with Skyfall is that Spectre's supposed to happen what, 6 months after Skyfall?
We don't really know.
Spectre starts on November 1st, Day of the Dead. So that means
right.
Yeah, either I'm assuming it's a year after Skyfall.
Either that, or it's really cold in June in Scotland.
Yeah, or it's probably more like late February in Scotland or early February.
Yeah, almost a year.
Yeah, it makes a little more sense that way if that's how it was going. Because Like, I don't know how cold it gets in Scotland. I know how cold it gets here. It's cold as...
Well, I think when you look at, like, a map, we're almost on the same...
But they don't get the same snowfall. Because what throws me off is, like, for when I associate winter, I'm assuming that it's either early January or late.
To our Scotland listeners, can you tell us when the weather, like, becomes cold enough for the ice to freeze?
Email us at thejamesbondcomplex@gmail.com to tell us when... What day the skyfall climax happens?
The ice is thick enough for him to run on it.
It's not that thick, like,
but enough for him to run at it a while. Yeah, before he realizes that he gets thin, and then like I can fall through at any time. Like, and so
enough for him before he starts thinking, "Am I too fat?"
No, but he hesitates first. I love that sequence. Like, no, I love that. For a second, he thinks it's like, if I'm going to beat them, I have to chance it. Yeah. And he starts running. But then he finds out that there was already a goon on the ice, apparently, waiting for him.
Yeah. Which is kind of, I mean, and then they fall through the ice.
Why didn't they just kill him? Oh my God. I'm going that realistic scenario. It's not that type of movie, Matt.
It's kind of like when, we're getting away from the winter conversation, but sticking with Skyfall, I can't remember if it was my father or someone else watched Skyfall, and the movie's okay, but like, Why does Silva say, kill them, but don't touch her, and he's pitching grenades in the house? Yeah. It's like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
We want her alive, but you were going to burn the fucking house down.
Yeah, you were going to kill her, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it was your whole intention was to murder her.
And he wins, so.
But he wanted to murder her in his way.
Yeah. Oh, that's so important.
The murder-suicide thing was like, this is the ultimate goal, but like, yeah, I'll throw a grenade at her and hope I miss.
We haven't talked about Spy, ironically enough, which is one of the most iconic winter.
We touched on it a little bit, but no, yeah, you're right.
That's the only part that's filmed in Canada.
Yeah.
The only Bond film ever shot in Canada, partially.
Oh, it's one of those iconic...
I know Jean wants to go to that mountain, but I'm like...
Isn't it on Baffin Island?
Yeah, you can go. I'm not going.
How expensive is that trip? Because, I mean, it's not anywhere near civilization.
No, that's not something I want to even contemplate
doing. That's a real adventure trip.
I think it's one of those plans that, I'd love to do it, but...
But it's almost like the Falkland Islands where they put the tomb. Or is it the Falkland Islands that they put the tombstone of Bond? Or
is that in Norway?
Is it in Norway?
Falkland Islands.
I know it's on some weird island that's somewhere that's like super inaccessible.
Well, I know they filmed a lot of No Time to Die. A lot of that movie 16 hours long, but they filmed a lot of No Time to Die.
I'm still watching it.
I'm still watching. I'm finishing it this morning, actually. Don't tell me what happens at the end. But they filmed a lot of No Time to Die in Norway. I know the island is supposed to be. There's supposed to be a Japanese?
Faroe Islands. Sorry, I've gotten the mix up with the Falkland Islands.
Didn't they shoot one of the Star Wars movie there?
Possibly. Isn't that where they filmed all the Jedi Temple scenes?
Yeah.
Jedi Temple scene.
And with the puffins and Disney Star Wars movies.
Where they had such a problem with the puffins that they had to CGI them into another creature so that it would make sense. Yeah, that's it. Now the Faroe Islands, and I still have no idea where they are, but they're not.
They're not in Argentina.
Not in Argentina.
Okay.
I don't know why I thought they were in Argentina. I think it's because it seemed like it was a colder climate, so I thought that it was closer to Antarctica. But I still have no idea where this has been. Anyway.
Alas, the climax of No Time to Die, even though it leaves us cold, it's not a wintry city. Boom. But back to Spy, the best Bond movie. No, I'm joking.
The best Bond book too, but no.
Right.
Yeah, lots of good.
I do like the fact that it starts and he's up there in the shack.
Yeah.
Shacking up. That's kind of a neat way of starting it, because it does give it this, on va aller à la campagne ce week-end, à notre chalet, des choses comme ça.
This is done. Can I remember the novelization's part of that? Kind of fun too.
Yeah.
I've never read the novelization of Spy with Me from the
I actually would recommend that and Moonraker. They're both fun. They're better than some Tunisian novels.
I'll steal the copy that's at the Chateau Frontenac next time I'm there.
Right. Why next time we see each other? Well, we're seeing each other. This can get cut out, but yeah, we're seeing each other in literally a few weeks. So I'll give you long-term loan. I mean,
I got a couple of them now.
Yeah, and I'm like, all right, that book's there. When do I need that book? Never.
Yeah. It's useful. Some of those books are useful, though. I do enjoy the John Griswold or whatever it's called.
Enjoy it for as long as you want.
The John Griswold.
It's the big thick one. It's like a guide where he takes apart like all the books and like all the little details from the books from like the 60s and all the things he references that are too old for like modern readers to understand what he's talking about.
Retentive.
Very much so. Like it's kind of like the Bond lexicon on crack. Like they've taken all the little details. Like for Goldfinger, he traces out the entire map of the golf course as it was in the 60s and explains the entire game of golf visually through diagrams of what each
That's too much. You know what it's like? Yeah. It's as if you had all, you know, you were suddenly rich, you retired from your job, and you said, in my retirement, I am going to write the clarification book to end all clarification.
I'm not that.
No, if you did that, that's not.
But it's not even something I would contemplate. Like
I'm only saying if, you know, if that happened, that's what that book is. It's like a massive clarification of literally everything and all that.
I like that term, character clarification.
Yeah, he's really good at them.
I'm more about characters than.
That's the kind of book that I don't even think Fleming, like some of those details he thought of. Like, I mean, it was already in his mind. It's not stuff that he would commit to writing. I think he just went in, he wrote the novel, and that's it. There's no background notes.
Well, there was no time. Like, there was no time. He knocked them out so quickly. Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, George Lucas wrote, like, all of Star Wars over years before filming the first one. He had, like, background stuff. Oh, he did. He had,
he had
all the universe mapped out before.
He hadn't written episode one when he wrote the first. Like, he just wrote a bunch of versions and picked up elements of it.
He had character development for everyone, whereas Fleming just wrote it as he thought about it. And then this guy writes an entire 100-page or 1,000-page kind of guidebook about all the background stuff that Fleming was thinking but never committed to paper anywhere.
I've heard that George Lucas back in, I guess he would have written Star Wars in 76 or something like that, 75, 76. And I have it on good authority that he's at his typewriter and he's like, is this the scene where I introduced Jar Jar Binks? No. Now's not the time. Save that for later. Save the best for later.
Do we have anything else to add for the Winter Bond moments? Is there anything that you think is missing from a Winter Bond moment that he hasn't done? Like, he hasn't been on ice skates. He's been on an ice rink, and he's been near ice skaters.
It's not Batman and Robin. Let's not do that. I don't want to see Bond suddenly ice skates.
I wouldn't mind a winter, you know, we have an escalade in for ice only near the end, but I would like one that's more of a vintage wintry setting with a lot of tension, and maybe he's trying to avoid someone chasing him up the mountain, stuff like that. How would you do it and still make it exciting, because he don't need it to last 20 minutes long, but that's something I would like to see, like winter, avec les pics, leather. He's either trying to not be seen because he's chasing someone.
There's a good spot for that here, because the Montmorency Falls completely freeze over. Mm. So you could technically do it on the falls. People do it climbing up the falls on ice, which is probably incredibly crazy dangerous.
Mm. Yeah, you know that.
It's a way to kill yourself.
You know, we didn't talk about our favorite film that much, but Diane Day has great moments that are ruined by poor CGI, because I don't know if you've seen icebergs sort of flipping in the middle of the sea. That is the most impressive and terrifying thing at the same time.
But are there that many icebergs around Iceland?
I don't know, but they created one with a giant space laser, so I don't think we need to worry about that. But
see, that's one of the things I wasn't worried about at the Ace Hotel yesterday, is giant space laser.
No, neither was I. But
I get your point. It is. I've seen those too. It's quite something.
It's and I was there's a, I don't remember her name, but there's a diver, somewhat famous, that went in sort of an ice cavern in sort of a glacier in Antarctica, and they were noticing that the fish were like kind of getting the hell out of where they were, and like they decided, you know what, let's get out.
Yeah.
Just as they left, like the ice collapsed.
Okay.
And it's just that's nightmare scenario. And I'm like, if the CGI had been there, like the scenario of the gliding is great. It's Bondian, but how do you shoot that in 2002 without it would be like crap CGI.
Well, they couldn't. But I mean, now you could probably work it with like archival footage and like try to.
No, but I think the CGI is for it to happen. We're talking about Avatar CGI today. They could do it today. If somebody has time and money and time. And the skills, they can take. We have access to the green screen footage of Pierce Brosnan on a little pad of water going, which is embarrassing.
Oh, so you think that they should redo that?
No, I'm saying as a student, if you're doing CGI and you want to, you know, that's.
That would be a good practice. Yeah,
it would be a good project, right? Because the animation, even the character animation of Pierce Brosnan, the CGI character looks like Spider-Man. And Spider-Man in 2002 is not Spider-Man in...
No.
Like,
even worse.
He's a sausage. He's a sausage of Spider-Man. He doesn't have a suit. It's just a sausage.
Yeah.
And somebody could do a better version. It's a good... You know, that's a challenge or an idea. I don't want to say challenge, but it's something that if you want to do, you could do it. And
that's a good one.
Disney's good at doing it with like robotics, like even like using semi-practical effects. Because I mean, there's Spider-Man robotic. Yeah, until it fails. But
you know what? When I was working in for a VFX company, the motion rigs are garbage apparently.
Oh really?
Yeah. You think we're gonna film and we're gonna use that footage? Often you just have to scrap it and. Yeah. Built it from scratch because it looks like crap. You can't control the image and everything. It looks like garbage most of the time.
But they were using motion capture. I mean, a lot of...
Not motion Lord capture. Motion capture. It's not motion capture exactly.
The rigs,
it's a motion rig. Like, let's say you have a character that's riding a dragon. There, you're going to put the actress on top of a rig that looks like the dragon. They're going to CGI the dragon. And often they have to scrap everything.
Just and then restart and do something half practical and half...
No. They do it entirely in CGI. They have to scrap everything.
Yeah, I guess. Huh? I don't know.
You're
more the expert on that than...
The producer I was working
for. Is that not what they did a little bit in the Spectre sequence when he's skiing the plane? Is that what they did? Then they do have a motion rig for that thing?
Yeah, but
maybe
not,
I'm making that up.
It's not. I think they only use it for the close-ups when they. Because what I'm talking about is a CGI character with live action footage on top of it. It's also garbage. They don't. It's front down.
Right.
But yeah, it's something that I, you know, as garbage as it looks, I've been using that word way too much. As bad as it looks. And directly, I would like to attempt something with an iceberg and Bond. And an iceberg flipping is just beautiful and sort of epic.
As long as they don't pull a quantum and turn it into like a ecological woke moment, I think that's fine by me.
I don't mind. I don't think
global quantum. Warming and it's a global warming thing and the bad guys.
What's wrong about being conscious about the environment? It
doesn't belong in Bond, in my opinion. I think
I'm comfortable.
Bang, bang. That's what
I'm comfortable. You know, I recycle. I take care, and I'm aware of. But you know, I know what you mean. But
I recycle, and I do.
I don't think that quantum is ecological. I think it's more big business
because of the water.
It's big business and government sort of.
Yeah, they're like intentionally closing the tap. That's what you see the people.
That's more anti-government.
It's more anti-government
and anti-business than environment.
But they're trying to.
I guess I see the two sides of it though.
I'm seeing the ecological standpoint of like, oh well, water is an important resource.
Yeah, water is an important resource. You have to
don't ruin your. But I mean, does it make a good Bond? We're getting away
from it. The point is that
last week's episode.
The point is a business is trying to screw over, and criminal organizations is trying to screw over the population of a small country. It's not, oh, we don't have water because we spoil all our resources. No, it's because they're screwing over the little guy.
But his company is Green Planet, and it's an ecological...
Yeah, but that's ironic.
Yeah,
it's ironic, but I think it's more of like a...
Yeah, but it it's also a commentary about... There's a lot of... you know, I tend to be more left-winning, but there's also...
I like winning, too.
There's a lot of hypocrites. And on both sides of the
both sides of the law, the political spectrum.
Yeah, political. Thank you. There are a lot of people. Oh, I'm right, but deeply they're leftist. And some people. Oh, I'm left. Deep down, they're just hypocrites that want the greedy hypocrites that use that. And I think Green is an hypocrite. Mm-hmm.
True. Right is one thing. I think most people who say I'm right are more right to center than they are like true right, and they're probably a little bit closer to the left than they think they are.
Yeah. But I'm more. I'm always in the center, and maybe a little bit to the left. But I understand some points of the right. And anyway.
Anyway, your argument is invalid because they recycle the bond scripts all the time.
Thank you, Edgar. We almost turned into a political. Not even debate discussion.
Discussion. Because I mean, I don't.
The politics of quantum of
science. Yeah, but I mean, it's Canada. We're a liberal country. There's
liberal. Yeah.
God. Enough of this snowflake stuff.
Hang on.
Any other?
My phone's going crazy all of a sudden.
It's Jason showing more pictures of his date with Jessica Chastain last night.
He got pretty close.
He did.
He got really close. Smelled her breath.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And she gave a good smile.
Seriously, that's a $1 million smile. Like, yeah. I see what she makes the big bucks. That's a gorgeous smile.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Good on Jason.
But no, I'm getting these. A strange text message.
Are you seeing the Spectre logo?
No, it's just a giant
think of your sins.
So it's giant letter Q.
Oh, cute.
It's from cute. We've discussed that. Yeah, we have cute has been in the garden. Yep. No, it's from M. Wheat-ay? Oh no,
Wheat-ay.
Sorry,
like a cereal.
Like wheat.
I think we had a little too much Jameson last night. M. White. He wants to know if we have. I think he's a little drunk too. People everywhere.
We have people everywhere. Wouldn't you agree, gentlemen?
I would agree.
That is the first thing you should know about the James Bond complex. As you would as the co-hosts, of which I am as well. www. You know, even though me and Matt don't record, we live in the same city, but we haven't recorded in person in a few months. We were actually talking about that yesterday. So I need you once again. I'm counting on you, Matt.
Yes.
With two T's, titties, to refresh my memory. Is there a www.thechainsawman.com?
There is
one. Okay, good. I
almost didn't renew the but we did.
Okay, it's true, yes.
Apparently, I own MattoAuclair.com, and apparently I don't own MattoAuclair.com anymore. No. I forgot to renew that.
Oh, okay.
So I'm all right. It's my true name, Matthew.
The license was renewed?
Yeah, that was renewed. Yeah.
You'll get my money sometime.
You know what? I'm letting it go because I don't need two websites. That's one expense too many, so I'm going to turn that part of my personal website. It's only MattoAuclair.com. But we have the James Bond Complex. It is also a Tumblr account that I'm the only one who keeps it updated.
What's a Tumblr account? Yeah. I thought that was a myth. I didn't know it's that existed.
But, you know, I've been, you know, posting our shows on there, but I need to, anyway.
Where can we find our shows, Monsieur?
On anchor.fm, on Spotify.com, on the Google Podcast.
You know which one I want to hear?
Golden Gun?
No. Balado Diffusion Québécois, Poutine.
Balado Diffusion Québec, which I actually signed us up on that platform early in the show, and I forgot about it. And when you found out, you just keep remembering.
Tap into that French Canadian market.
Yeah,
all two of them.
Yeah.
So Jean and Péo. Matt
numéro deux. That's pretty much it. I don't think Péo listens to every episode, and Jean doesn't listen at all. So.
So
Facebook, Instagram.
We have Facebook. We have Instagram. We are no longer on Twitter. So if you're wondering why we're not on Twitter is what's Obi-Wan's quote in your
scum and villainy.
It's a toxic environment in general.
It's toxic and it's not
It's not on our brand.
I never really liked that platform. Only Edgar used it.
It was. I'll give Twitter this much. A significant portion of the guests who have sort of become recurring guests and what they did come through Twitter. So I'll give it that. But since we've made those connections, so that's done and we have those sort of in our pocket whenever those people are available. And since Twitter sucks, we don't need it anymore.
But most of those people have transitioned to Instagram and Facebook and other.
Instagram is less negative.
And it's easily accessible, and I think it's more on brand for us.
It's more fun.
No, mm-hmm. It's more fun, yeah.
I don't like reading. No. Especially that most people are horrible writers and spellers and make mistakes. And
there are a few greats that are good at the spoken, the written word,
but yeah, the double wife being one.
Most
people are more of like Matt Spazer and Peter Book. Because I'm looking at the book from here.
Yeah, but even Spazer has an Instagram.
But I mean, like when he wants to, if any, I'm thinking of like License to Queer and like those sites will actually write articles. Even our friend Bill Koenig, I mean, he still writes for the Spy Command, and he writes articles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a journalist by trade. So.
But I mean, there's like some people who actually go to the effort and put something eloquent. There's not everyone who's going to do that. Someone's going to, I got a picture of so-and-so and I'm going to show it. And they're better at communicating verbally, visually than they are written.
Yeah.
And
but most of these people have websites. So they just need a post that says, with a picture of what they're talking about. Say, hey, I have a new post. Go to my site.
Yeah. Pretty please. Leave a like, subscribe, and
yeah.
Speaking of which, it's your turn now. What's a golden gun?
That's on Apple Podcasts. And you can like, subscribe, and give us a 5-star golden gun review.
Share the show, man.
Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. And Emery, you shared your home with us this weekend, and it was very magnanimous of you. And for which we thank you, merci beaucoup. And just as James Bond, you know, we're back into sort of the gray area. We're not sure when Jimbo's coming back. He's coming back. When?
Barbara TBD. Will tell us.
How? Who? In what shape or form?
What decade?
Decade is a good question.
Will I be alive? TBD, man. TBD. I don't know. But so too with the James Bond complex, with whatever is on the Google calendar. And sur ce, toujours un plaisir. À la prochaine.
Au revoir. À la prochaine.
Hasta la próxima. Ciao, belle.